Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
It's Richard Smallwood and God of Promise. I can tell you, he truly is a God of promise, and all his promises are definitely fulfilled. I can attest to that. I am just so elated right now because the only lawyer of the radio is back. Mr. Sekomela.
How are you doing, Nico?
Okay, let's try that again. I need to get you on the proper one.
Yes.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yourself?
Oh my goodness, you're back.
Yo, I'm back. Yo, I've been here for some time. I missed being in studio.
Abutebuho, you know what happened? When was it? Last week. I was ready to have him on, and he was driving. Like I told you, he travels a lot.
Yes.
I tried for the whole hour until I gave up, and I was like, okay, let's close the show. Imagine.
Apologies to you and to my beautiful listeners of the Legal Junction.
But what matters is you are back.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh, man. So, yeah, this is Mr. Pulisa Sekomela, and he is our resident lawyer, as I've been telling you. So, Mr. S.K. Mruti, like I've called him, guys. I've called him everything you can think of.
Yes.
Mr. Sekomela, what are we talking about today?
You see, Luca, there's something that I've realized, and it's something that is all over the news. The issue of debt and what ultimately leads to a person being insolvent.
Okay.
So I'm thinking today, let's touch the National Credit Act, let's touch the Insolvency Act, and see how we can assist our listeners, because I'm certain we have listeners out there that are having issues with these things of debts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
another one is sitting on the edge of his right now.
Yeah, you see, so we really need to deal with this, because we have listeners that on day-to-day basis, they avoid debt collectors and they do not know the risk of avoiding such calls.
Okay.
You see, and the cost implication, because every call that they make out to you, every letter that they send out
is
to you,
billed on you,
has got financial obligations.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eish.
So I think let's touch insolvency.
Yes, please.
Yes. We'll just start firstly with the definition. Insolvency, in simple terms, it's a situation whereby your debts are above your liabilities, basically, are above your assets.
Okay. What you owe is more than what you own.
Yes, it's more than what you own. Such a person is insolvent, because what you have vis-a-vis what you owe, then it's a problem. Your debts supersedes.
You might as well sell everything and be left with nothing.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's a trap, because even if you are to sell everything and remain with nothing,
it's still not a solution.
Yeah. Ish.
Yeah, and again, Osluko, man, before we proceed, man, I'm used to this thing of arriving here and say, how are you, Osluko? Today we are three.
There's three of us, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
You see, so we'll be looking into sources of insolvency law.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the Insolvency Act number 24 of 1936.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other one that we'll be looking into is the Companies Act. Because remember this, we've got two types of insolvency.
All right.
We've got commercial insolvency and we've got actual insolvency.
Meaning?
Commercial insolvency is when a company owes more than what they own.
Okay.
Then actual insolvency is when a neutral person, just like me and you,
mm-hmm.
owes more than what they own.
Okay.
You see, so those are the two differences. That is why one of the sources of insolvency law is the Companies Act number 61 of 1973.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll also looking into the same Companies Act 71 of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Then we will look into the Close Corporations Act number 69 of 1984.
All right.
Then we will also look into the National Credit Act.
That's the one we always hear about.
Yes.
National Credit Act.
Yes, because this is where things start.
Mm.
When we talk about the National Credit Act, is the one that also advises debt collectors not to abuse debtors in terms of affordabilities and all that. Because, you know, debt collectors, you'll owe 20,000, they will call you and say the money is needed today. Then the question is, what does the act says? You see, because there's, I normally say this when we do the legal junction, that there is a community myth about the law. And there is a real legal position. And the real legal position of the law, we find it in the National Credit Act, or we find it in the precedents. That is why also we'll be looking into the common law. What does the common law says? What does natural justice says? What does justa causa says? That is the common law principle that we'll also be looking into. Then again, lastly, we'll be looking into, if you can recall, Luko, you'll realize that ever since we started the legal junction, we always engaged on decided cases. We cannot speak the law without having to refer back what
to
the courts
law.
To case law. You see, that is why in interpretation of statutes, you will find the retrospective way of analysis to the law and the retroactive to say the law moves forward, does not move backwards. So that is why we'll always refer to the decided cases to say, in instances like this, what did the courts decide? So that's basically what we will be looking into. And also, the same Companies Act 61 of 1973 makes the Insolvency Act applicable to the winding up of the companies that are unable to pay. You remember I spoke about the two types of insolvency, which is the actual insolvency, where a neutral person owes more than what they own. Then also the commercial insolvency, which is now regulated by this Companies Act 61 of 1973. It enforces the Insolvency Act to say, should this company so and so be indebted over what they own, then the winding up will have to take course.
I have a question, you know, and I think it's just lingering at the back of my mind before we move forth, Mr. Sekamela. At what point can a declaration be made that you are insolvent, be it as a company or as a neutral person? Because I think sitting here, I might know that, when I think of my debt, they're far beyond what I owe. But is it just a general thing that I should know that I am insolvent? Or is there a point where I then become declared as insolvent? Is there something in the law where they say, hey, now we declare you insolvent?
It's a status. It's a status in law. But also, there is what we call a voluntary insolvency. You can enter into insolvency by yourself.
Meaning
you can come up and say, I am so and so, and I realize that my liabilities are above my assets. I wish to be declared insolvent.
What does that contribute to then? What does it look like? Why should I declare? Where does it help me? Does it help me with my with debtors and debt collectors?
The initial formulation of it was to assist debtors. But now it has since been abused by these people called the DCs, the debt counselors.
Counselors,
do you understand? Because they will say, we are going to place you under a debt review. But you must understand, this status is very dangerous. Should you say, myself, Luko, I'm relocating from South Africa to another country, you will not be eligible
to
travel. Because in principle, your liabilities are above.
So you don't afford to travel abroad.
You don't afford to travel. How do you travel abroad while you are carrying a status whereby your liabilities are above your assets?
Are we talking about traveling here, or are we talking about just... are we talking about relocating, or are we talking about traveling per se?
Traveling. Yeah, just mere traveling, you say, no, I'm going on a vacation for 2 days. You will not be allowed to basically leave the country.
So the implications of insolvency are quite...
The consequences of insolvency are very bad and harsh,
Sure. It's okay. Okay, go ahead. I'm thinking of this because there's been this new thing, and it's quite a scam, I must say, where people are called by these companies and they say, no, look, you're being abused by your debtors and your creditors, whatever. And the problem now is that they're charging too much interest. We want to assist. And people are not aware, only to find out that they are being taken over by DCs.
Yeah, you see, and also those particular calls, I think we need to also caution our listeners. Mm. Those particular calls are very detrimental. Ask me how. You get a call, you entertain them.
Mm.
Not being aware that you are actually entering into a
and you
debt.
Give details. Exactly. Yes. That's what almost happened to my friend over
yes.
the weekend.
And you see, I normally tell people that it's easier to enter into debt review. But unfortunately, to be removed from debt review, it's a court application. You see, you can get into a debt review or whatsoever, debt counseling, with a phone call.
You.
To be removed, you'll have to visit the magistrate.
Guys, we're laughing at it now, but it's such a hectic thing, honestly. And I think they prey mostly on the elderly, I've realized. They prey mostly on the ignorant.
Yes.
And Mr. Sekerman always says, ignorance is not an excuse.
It's not an excuse.
Ignorant, they prey on the ignorant and the elderly, which is
yes.
sad. There's a gentleman that is also doing some law things on this other radio. And he always says, it saddens me when I hear older women especially crying because they don't know how they got into it.
Yes, that's the sad part. Because now you have to pay an attorney to remove you from debt review, which you did not necessarily
consent to.
Your interest was only based on this person saying to you, we want to help you with your debts. You know, there's no one. We are living in a credit world. There is no one that is not somehow indebted
of
to
course.
The other. You see, but the question is, we need to have a way as to how we address our debts. Because some of these things, we are the ones that leads them to the creditors to apply sequestration. Because it will start with being placed in mora. That is the first stage of debt collection.
All right.
Where they will send you a text that you are owing credit provider so and so. Then you just take that text light. Then it's charged on you. Then the next thing, it's a phone call. You avoid it. You say, hey, Lava, you've even saved the number. You know that when this one calls, then it's
and
bad.
And you block them as well.
You block them, you see. Then the next thing, it's a letter of demand. Subsequently, it's a section 129, the final letter of demand. Then the matter now is going where? To summons stage. You remember the verse that we quoted, Luko, when we start the first show of the Legal Junction? The Bible says, while on your way to court, make sure that you and your brother resolve the matter, because at court you'll be judged by men.
I remember it.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'm sitting here and licking my wounds. I'm like, hey, guys, I need to sort these things out.
So to avoid these things, you know, you speak to these people. You tell them, my financial situation is bad. They cannot kill you for owing them. Do you see? And the minute you engage them, you also remedy the situation. Look, guys, I know you want two rents per month, but I can only afford 50 cents for now. I'm not disputing anything. I agree totally that I'm indebted to you, but I cannot afford to pay that much. The Act, the National Credit Act, protects debtors. Yes, the consumers in such instances. But now we have consumers that will avoid calls. You see, then the next thing, someone's, the sheriff is knocking at the door saying, I'm here to deliver summons. You must appear or defend this summons, or you must appear in court so and so on something that you should have remedied. That is why that verse encourages engagement. You see, there's nothing that can remedy things better than communication.
Yeah.
Because avoidance makes situation worse. Because if you avoid me and you are owing me, I also make a plan about you to say to say this person is owing me and this is avoiding me. Then this is 1, 2, 3 steps that I must take.
Sure.
So better settle out of court.
Better settle out of court.
And he always says that one of his first episodes he did with us was conflict resolution. I remember.
Yeah, dispute resolution. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, which encourage. It's a very interesting space of law.
Sure.
But it encourages resolutions being taken. You know, funny things, Brati, that have been taken to courts.
Yes.
On day-to-day basis, courts are entertaining
minor stuff,
which we could have resolved. But pride will say, I'll come with my lawyer, I'll show you. And then that other person says, I'll also come with my lawyer.
And then you're wasting money and time.
You're wasting money on litigation, which should have been resolved through alternative dispute resolution.
Mm. All right. So what do these acts say in essence? I think let's get to that because our time is running.
The National Credit Act protects both. Remember, I always say this, that the wheels of justice, they sharpen or they move left and right.
Okay.
They will somehow protect the creditors.
All right.
But they will also not promote
abuse to
abuse. Abuse by the creditors. You see, that is why we have what Brad Ebs is mentioning to reckless lending, where you can see this person is not affording, but because you want to further put them into debt, you approve that particular credit.
Those ones that say we don't check credit record.
Yeah, we don't check if you want a loan car. Yeah, you want a Mercedes, you just come, we'll give you a car. You see, that's reckless lending because they don't necessarily look into your finances, into your affordability schedule.
Yeah, sure.
You see, so they don't do those things. What they are interested in is for you to drive out the car from the garage.
Imagine.
Then from there, you have signed a contract that binds you to say you are going to owe them for 5 years, you are going to owe them for 10 years. That's basically the position where they want to place you.
Hey, I've even heard of another one, Mr. Sakamela, where you buy a car, this person says they bought a car online, and then they said they'd bring it on a particular day, then they brought the car but didn't bring the contract, and then one day they came and they brought the contract, it was signed outside, but it was just one paper. Before she knew it, the contract was much bigger than that, it wasn't just one paper.
Yes.
So you agreed on everything without all the other papers being initialed and signed, whatever the case may be. And she says, I don't know how these people work. Only to find out the interest rate is ridiculous. I think it was something to like 40% or something.
Yeah.
Like, so am I bound by law with this? And I'm like, eish. Like, please approach, you know, somebody that can assist you with this because it just doesn't sound right.
Exactly. You see, most of the contracts we enter into being excited.
Yeah, what you always talk about.
And you have a right to say, you know what, I don't want to sign now. Let me go read the documents. But remember, that other person on the other side want to seal a deal.
Exactly.
Then, but you still have that right to say, you know what, this is me that is going to enter into these things. It's me that is going to suffer the consequences.
Exactly.
Let me go get a lawyer that can peruse this contract.
And you can keep the car so long if the issue is the fact that I have the car. Take it and keep it while I read the contract.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not. So you find that you have already phoned cousins to say, you know what, today I'm going to fetch a car.
Yeah, you've even posted that picture. You know that picture with the red bow and the basket and your name written on it to say you've just bought the car.
It's already flying on social media. So you don't even read the do's and don'ts of the contracts, TNCs. You just sign. Then ultimately, you have signed for something that is going to bear very bad ramifications. So it's always wise to do things the right way. Shortcuts do not pay because they will put you into situations where if you have done it right, then you wouldn't be in that situation.
Exactly.
Now, if I may interject, guys, here's a question. And it's twofold, Mr. Siakamela. As a consumer... because the law is such a complex field, I'm just a lay person, I'm just a customer, I'm just a consumer. Legally, would it be okay for me to, using that car purchasing scenario, to then record everything, including when the car dealership staff are explaining the T's and C's to me, record everything, voice note, not to catch them out, but you know, to
protect
to go back
as well.
To go back to that,
to refresh
my memory, because a lot goes on, you know, and it's I think it's safe, because look, we don't read, a lot of people don't read nowadays, but if you have something in audio where they actually unpack the contract for you,
yes,
then you can easily fast forward and say, okay, let me fast forward to 10 minutes of the convo and refresh yourself and see if maybe they may have misled you here and there into then entering into this burdensome contract.
Yeah, the sad part is that you can record for your interest.
All right.
But remember, in terms of Popia,
okay,
I need to agree.
Of course.
Yeah, I was working when speaking about Popia. I was working with a colleague in the CBD. This street camera guys.
You know, I know them too well.
They take us a picture. I hear my colleague being very furious, saying, "Hey, do you know what is Poppy Act? Do you know that you are infringing my Poppy Act?" Yeah. So, same with the recording. You can record as long as you are not going to use it
against them without their consent. We have consented up front to say, look, we're not catching each other out.
Yeah.
We're just recording this so that we have a
For the interest of whatever transaction we want to seal. Yeah. So you need to agree first in principle.
Yeah.
Well, that person must be aware that, I'm being recorded. But if I'm being recorded, I'm not aware, then that's an infringement.
Sure.
Not neglecting what Mr. Siakamela is actually talking about when he says, you have a responsibility to read the contract, because you might be able to get away with some details, like you're saying, if you have been misled somewhere, somehow. But then again, another question will come back. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Siakamela, where it says, yes, this is what the salesperson, this is the information the salesperson gave you. But what you signed, what did it say? Because unfortunately, they don't read those T's and C's for us.
Yes.
It's up to us to actually read them.
The fine prints, they don't touch. They only touch basic stuff or general stuff of the contract. But where now they know that it's within your interest to know, they will not inform you about those things.
Oh,
and you must check. That's a bad sale, actually.
Yeah.
It's not a sale in good faith.
Yes.
It's just that they've never met someone that can take them to task.
Challenge them.
You see, so it's a bad faith sale because you're giving me this impression. I'm under the impression that I'm buying a puppy only to find I'm buying a cat.
You know.
You see.
You find a car with a balloon payment.
Yes.
You know, it says pay for 5 years.
Yes.
At the end of 5 years, the car is not actually yours.
For sure.
There's still a balloon payment.
It actually happened to my aunt recently. Beginning of this year, when I was in the Eastern Cape, she came to me and she said, you know, I was celebrating that I'm finishing paying my car. What I did not realize is that I still had a balloon payment.
Oh, my goodness.
Imagine. And I'm like, hey, my
And
guys,
it's a serious amount
of money. Yeah, it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. You find sometimes you literally have to refinance and start another set of installments.
By that time, this car is falling apart.
Exactly.
So it's just not right to make sure that you read your contracts and you understand how does the law favors you? You know.
So how does it favor us according to the law? That's where I want to get to.
Yeah, you see, like I said, the wheels of justice, they sharpen left and right. There's where the law will protect you, and there's where the law will not protect you. You see, because we'll also be looking into Section 36 of the Constitution, the limitation of rights, because people will be going around saying, I've got rights, I've got rights. And now your rights becomes limited where now they want to infringe my rights. Your rights are your rights. Yes, we understand. But now where now they become an infringement to my rights, then Section 36 of the Constitution comes in to say, now we are limiting these rights.
All right.
You can exercise your rights, but not this far.
Okay.
You see, so that's normally what happens. So, as citizens, it's more important that we understand our legal standing.
Mm.
It's just that we live in the times where shortcuts it's a day to day business.
Yeah,
you see, we no longer want to exercise or do things correctly.
Mm.
I think let me also show you something here while we are talking about insolvency.
Yes, please.
Remember, in insolvency process, the aim here is it's ultimately for the creditors to get what we call a writ of execution,
mm-hmm.
or a garnishing order against you,
mm-hmm.
or an emolument attachment against you,
mm-hmm.
or order of payments by installments.
Okay.
Because the aim of creditors is to recover what is owed to them.
Mm. Okay. Mm.
And they will try by all means, either by way of sale in execution,
mm-hmm.
or writ of execution, so that they can recover what is owed to them. Mm-hmm. Then look at one thing very interesting about this purpose or process of sequestration.
Mm-hmm.
The aim here is to gather creditors. What in Latin we'll say is concacas creditorium, the gathering of creditors. So this is the most interesting part, because when you have gathered the creditors, you are able to negotiate with them, applying the one and for all rule.
Okay.
You see, you negotiate once. You don't negotiate with this creditor, then you go and negotiate with that other one, you negotiate with that other one. You mm-hmm. put them under
one basket,
mm-hmm. then you negotiate your payment terms. Like
All right.
I said, the aim of the creditors is to basically recover what is owed
to them.
All right.
So that's where now it becomes a problem. If you dodge or you ignore their calls, then they will opt for what? For legal actions, whereby the same debtor will do what? Will bear the costs.
Okay.
So some things are very unnecessary. It's unnecessary to avoid debt collectors. They can call you, they can send you letters, but remember, if you do not have means, you do not have means.
Okay.
You see, yeah, then you make deferred arrangements with them.
Okay.
To say, look, guys, I'm currently in this situation. This is my financial position. Mm. But I guarantee you that isn't when my financial position changes, then I will definitely come to you and make repayments.
All right. You don't have to say, I'll make repayments now.
Tomorrow.
No, you remember with them, they want the money now.
Of course.
Yeah, they want the money now.
Tell me when you can pay, please.
Yes, and the act does not even allow them to use that notion of saying, we want payment today.
Mm.
You see, you give a person time.
Of course.
You give a person time and to say, this period that we can give to you for you to be able to settle this particular debt.
Mm.
You don't just come in ambush and say, I want payment now.
Exactly.
So that's where engagement, you see, now the other important issue about alternative dispute resolution, because this engagement about when one is going to pay, how one is going to pay, it's actually the process of mediation.
Oh, all right.
Hence, I said, mediation is applicable in every space of the law, be it in insolvency law, in labor law, in divorce, in family law. Mediation, it's applicable everywhere.
Mm.
So sure. It's something that we supposed to be taking advantage into.
It's a powerful tool.
It's a powerful tool to use. But now we and the other issue, remember we once spoke about the danger of anger. Because Bakwatisa, the debt collectors at times are slick. Yeah, so you end up, instead of engaging them about the debt, then you just get frustrated and start insulting them.
My aunt actually did it. And she would say, hey, you act like you don't have debt, Wena. And you think, yes, this is about you, Magaz. It's not about the person calling you.
Exactly.
That is how you have debt yourself. I say, I don't have the money now.
You see, so it's one of those things that we should be very careful about.
Mm.
To say, if debt collectors calls, engage them.
Mm.
Give them your honest opinion or view about your finances.
Yeah.
To say, this is me. I know my finances are like this. I can't afford to pay what you say I must pay now.
Exactly.
And this is how much I can pay.
Mm.
Remember, the minute you are paying something, you are actually even stopping or frustrating legal actions.
Okay.
Because here they want to sue you for 5,000.
Yeah.
Then today you paid 500. Then tomorrow they must amend their summons to reduce the 500 and now sue you for 4.5. Then the next time you pay 300. So the minute you make payments, you are actually frustrating the litigation process because they now don't know how much they must sue you for.
I like the
you see, so that's where now the law works as an advantage to you to say, pay something. You know you owe these people. But the minute you say, you know what, I'm not going to pay these people, then they will now come saying, let's go to court.
Is it possible for them to not accept a certain amount that you offer? Or is it just a way of persuading you to take it higher?
Yeah, you see, debt collectors are like salespeople.
Yeah.
Remember, the more they collect for these companies, the more profit they make.
Of course.
You see, the bigger commission they get.
Of course.
You see, so this is what they will do. They will always push you to a point that you settle, but which is good sometimes.
Yes,
because they will give you a settlement offer of a certain percentage.
All right.
To say, you are owing this much, but if you settle today, we can give you this percentage off. You see, so they can somehow come as more like financial advisors, but yet, you know, when you are in a situation, you will feel as if they are abusive.
Of course. When you are in a situation. Basically, when you are in debt, you will think they are.
Yeah, you'll think yeah. When you are in debt, you'll think that they are being abusive.
Mm.
And only to find that they are actually calling you to make possible arrangements.
Okay, because I see we are going to run out of time, Mr. Sekamela. Something has been running at the back of my mind.
Mm.
So let's say you owe AB, right?
Mm.
And before you know it, your debt is taken through to a debt collector, right? Let's call that C, right?
Mm.
So then now, you know exactly who you owe and you know why C is calling you.
Mm.
They're calling you because you owe AB.
Mm.
What are your rights, and is it permissible for you to go back to AB instead of entertaining C to say, hey, I know I've got a debt with you. I'd like to make an arrangement with you. Or do you now have to strictly deal with C because your debt has been moved to C?
Yeah, you see how it happens, ne? Before you are being handed over.
Yes.
There is internal, what we call pre-legal collection.
Okay.
Yes, every credit provider will have such a department.
Yes.
In their store or whatever business.
Okay.
To say, your duty is to call these people and remind them of their debts.
Yes.
Then the minute they realize that you do not adhere to the demands of the pre-legal collection.
Okay.
That's where now they will hand you over to a collection company.
Okay.
For some reason, collection company will be able to blacklist you.
Okay.
You see, a collection company will be in a position to take legal actions against you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you
can't take it back to the initial creditor. Do you have to strictly deal with the debt collector now, or can you actually say, let me go back to that first one?
Yeah, but if it's handed over, you have to engage the debt collectors. Because remember, there is cost implications.
Yes.
When the creditor opens a file with that debt collector,
yes,
there is financial implications that they suffer.
Okay.
So that is why some debt collectors, what they will do, they'll buy the debt book.
Yes.
You see, they'll buy the debt book
I've seen those ones who buy the debt book. I've seen them.
Yes.
I've seen them. I know them.
Yes. And they also do not adhere to one of the strongest defense in this debt things, which is called the Prescription Act.
I was about to say they actually thrive on that because people don't know when a debt is actually prescribed.
Yes.
And they don't know. For instance, I've even heard a thing where they say, once you acknowledge it, even after a certain number of years, then it starts. I don't know how true that is.
You revive it.
You revive it.
Yeah, you see, the only way to succeed with prescription as a defense is not to acknowledge anything.
Exactly. But doesn't that
within that period of 3 years.
Okay.
Because the minute you acknowledge either by text or by WhatsApp.
Or by voice call. You revive the debt.
Or paying 1 rand.
Or paying 1 rand. Hmm.
Does then the law of prescription fall away once you acknowledge?
Yeah, that process. Remember I spoke about the process that advantages the debtors, where you pay something, you interrupt the legal the litigation phase. So same this side with prescription. The minute you pay something,
it's an advantage,
you revive it. So if it's 3 years, it's 3 years of not accepting to anything, not admitting to anything. But where you get scared and you say, it's fine, I'll pay this much. Then you have interrupted prescription. You cannot use it as a defense.
Okay. I've also heard, is it true then that if they call you after 3 years, for instance, and you mention to them that debt is prescribed, they don't have a hold over you.
They don't have a hold over you because you never accepted or admitted to any debt within the period of 3 years.
Okay.
You see, if they come to you after 3 years, they can't, even if they can issue summons against you, you can just simply go to court and tell the magistrate that 3 years has lapsed and I'm standing here on the Prescription Act.
But let's talk about that then quickly before I let you go, Mr. Sangma, because we have to continue with this. You haven't shared all those statutes with me and those
laws. Yes, yes.
What then happens post this prescription? Let's say I tell you it's been 3 years. This debt is prescribed, right? Obviously, I'm off the hook. But what happens to the issues such as credit score and anything credit worthy?
Yeah.
What is your stand? What happens to you as the debtor?
Yeah, you see, that's where it becomes interesting. Because let's say I have blacklisted you.
All right.
Then that red flag will stay there maybe for 5 years.
Okay.
And then the matter, yes, has prescribed.
Yes.
But I have since blacklisted you.
Okay.
So that flag will always be there. And it will do what? It will call you as a debtor to say, hey, let me go negotiate with these people so that they can remove me.
Then negotiate with who? The ones you owe or the ones that blacklisted you? And how do you do that? Because then that means you go back and acknowledge the debt.
The ones that blacklisted you. Remember, you get blacklisted by a collection company.
Yes, okay.
So it will show
when
you do your credit checks.
All right.
It will show that, no, it's Siakamela that has blacklisted you.
All right.
Then you'll do what? You'll now start to come to us and negotiate.
What does that look like? Does it look like acknowledging that debt still, though you had said it prescribed? Or does it look like, how can you remove me from being blacklisted?
Yeah, you see, that one now, it will force you that something must be paid. Something must give.
Prescribed or not.
Or not, yeah, because now it's your name that is being listed. You see.
So ultimately, and if you want to be credit worthy, you'll have to pay.
Yes, it's either you'll have to approach a competent court to say these people have blacklisted me, but the matter is prescribed. Oh. But you will actually suffer the same financial consequences as going to those particular debt collectors and say, I'm here to negotiate. Please remove me from credit bureau. Mm. And this is how much we can negotiate that I pay you.
Oh,
than
okay.
to go pay an attorney to go to court to negotiate that you are being you are being blacklisted and you wish to be removed, you see. So financial consequences will always be either the same or even more when you go to courts, because legal fees do not come cheap.
Of course. Eish, very interesting. Mrs. Zekamela, unfortunately, I have to catch you.
Yeah, no.
Because of time.
Yes.
Because of time. But we're going to continue with this conversation on the other side. Unfortunately, without you, Teboho.
Yeah, Eish.
Because we are leaving you in peace.
Yeah, no, we're leaving him, Eish. So it's confirmed. Next week, we're no longer doing Mondays.
Yeah, we're no longer doing Mondays, guys. So this is me basically signing out literally right now.
Yeah.
This is Mr. Siyakamela and myself signing out of Monday's edition of Spectrum. I will now be on Heart to Heart Wednesday and Thursday. So that's 12 to 3 on Wednesday, 12 to 3 on Thursday, and only on Spectrum on Friday, 4 to 6. So I am officially with a clean and pure heart handing over to Teboho, who'll be keeping you company. And I don't want to say thank you to you, Mr. Siyakamela, if I'm chasing you away, because I still want you to come with me.
we're moving together.
Next week,
Wednesday, we are doing the legal dancing together.
Of course. Yes. So guys, thank you so much. And thank you, Teboho. As I bow out, and I really just pray that God, really, really gives you all the strength.
And
it's not draining. I'm not going to lie to you. It's lovely to be in the seat. So you're going to absolutely enjoy it. But thank you so much. Thank you for taking over.
I was telling him off air that this thing of radio, it's a collie.
It's addictive.
It's addictive.
You run away and you come back to
it. And all of the best, Bratevo woman. We speak blessings upon you.
Oh,
we will tune in. We'll definitely tune in. Even if we're moving to Wednesdays, we'll definitely tune in. Yes.
We are still with Radio Pulpit,
so much, of course.
Guys, I had a great time with you guys in studio. Learned a lot today.
Yeah.
So I know now what to do with my debt.
Yeah. Pay something.
No matter how little.
No matter how little, yes.
I wish we could blacklist those who owe us, as personal entities, but we're not there. Anyway.
He
knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Family, thank you so much. You have really been good to me for the past 2 months, because I joined this show in July. So it's July, yes. The whole of July and the whole of September. So thank you so much for being great. Definitely not leaving you alone. Dwayne coming through. And we'll do this again on Wednesday. From myself, Lukomkwedi, let's give it a name. Call it a day.
For sure. From myself, the only lawyer of the radio. Good night.
Did you know you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want? Check out our podcasts. Listen to your best love presenters anytime, anyplace. No need to miss out on your favorite programming. It's just a click away. Go to our website at radiopulpit.co.za and click on our podcast page for a variety of content at your fingertips. Yes, Radio Pulpit is still your daily companion.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729, and our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
Share the love. Share the truth. Share the life on 657 AM. You and 657 AM and life. A winning team on the road to eternity.